Mike, first of all, can you tell me what WaterSmart is?
Sure. WaterSmart is a, it's actually kind of a double organization. One side of it is a not-for-profit charitable organization that manages something called the Alberta Water Portal, and it provides lots of free public information on water management issues and other water-related issues all across the province. And then the other side of the house is a consulting arm that does work, well, all over the province, actually, from oil sands and formerly with COSIA, and a lot of work up in the Athabasca all the way down to the Old Man River.
Now, yesterday you were in Edmonton making a presentation on a project that you had worked with between WaterSmart and CCEMC, the Climate Change and Emissions Management Corporation. And I guess, first of all, what do you see as being the relationship between water and climate change?
Most climate scientists would agree, certainly in our part of the world, that water, meaning precipitation and evaporation and evapotranspiration, is probably the key issue that we will need to deal with as the climate changes. And if we look at the historical record and even the prehistorical record using tree ring data, it shows that climate has been changing, climate continues to change, climate will undoubtedly change in the future, and water has been affected dramatically by some of those climate changes. We need to start thinking about how we would adapt to that climate change, because it seems pretty inevitable, and we're actually watching it kind of in action as we speak.
So the project that you did with the CCEMC, what was that? What was it called?
The title of the project was the South Saskatchewan River Basin Climate Change Adaptation Project.
Now, why would you see this relationship between your organization and the CCEMC? Why did you get together?
Well, we felt that the CCEMC has done a lot of terrific work on climate mitigation, that is, developing technologies that would reduce CO2 emissions primarily, but other greenhouse gases as well, but primarily CO2. And we felt that, you know, maybe they should also look at what's going to happen to those of us living in Alberta, in this case in southern Alberta, when the climate changes as a result of anthropogenic emissions. But what we found when we looked into it was the climate is going to change whether we like it or not. And so what kind of adaptation mechanisms can be put in place that would enable us not only to survive but continue to thrive even if we run into some extremely dry periods?
So what was your study area?
It was the Red Deer River Basin, the Bow River Basin and all its tributaries, and the Old Man River Basin and all its tributaries. So basically all of southern Alberta, except for the Milk River system, which actually, as you may know, comes in to Canada and then goes out of Canada and it goes on into the Missouri and Mississippi watershed. So we didn't do that one because that one is actually being managed by an international joint commission.
And what are some of the special considerations with those three different watersheds?
Well, interestingly, we worked with NSERC, and they helped us to fund David Sochin to do climate change using the global circulation models and the regional circulation models to determine what impacts and what scenarios we might be looking at in southern Alberta. And as a result of that work and previous work, because he did literature search and all that good stuff too, it looked like the Red Deer, it might be slightly wetter over on average, but more extremes, that is to say more drought and more flooding. Then in the Bow, it looked quite a bit drier, but extremes, once again, of drought and floods, which we've certainly seen over the last decade or so. And the same thing for the Old Man, it looked even drier, generally speaking, for the long-term future.
So are there dams on all of these rivers?
Yes. All three of the rivers are, to one extent or another, managed rivers. We love thinking of them as beautiful and wonderful natural rivers, but actually all of them are, to some extent, managed by dams, whether for hydropower or irrigation.
Yeah, irrigation, when you look at southern Alberta, irrigation is a huge factor.
It underpins the economy down there. It's not just the farmers and their irrigated cropland and that sort of thing, but it's all the pipeline companies and all of the other infrastructure that goes along with that.
Just even from what you've said right now and also from what I heard in your presentation yesterday, this whole subject area is very complex. There's lots of moving parts. What would you say some of those complexities are?
Well, what we did was took the historic data that is available, and there's about 80 years of data on each of the three river systems. What we did was we took that historic data, so that would show us how much water actually came down the river in each of those 80 years. And then we applied to that the current demand, And then we also were able to put together future demands and forecast demand. For example, the city of Calgary growing, irrigation districts maybe needing more water, setting more aside for environmental functional flows and so forth. And you can build all that into an operational model, which is what we did. We did one river system at a time, and then the final stage of the project was combining them all into one single model so that we can look at the interactions among the river systems as well as those interactions within each river system.
So what are some interesting things that you discovered by doing this?
So just focusing on climate change now, there are a number of adaptation mechanisms that can be done using current infrastructure by slightly adjusting how they're being operated if and when we face a significant dry period or drought. And so we applied a number of scenarios to see, well, how much can we improve the situation by doing X or Y within the existing hydro dams so that, you know, you don't have to spend huge amounts of money in order to be able to do some adaptation that will actually make sense in the relatively short term. So we found a number of those on each of the river systems.
I know you talked an awful lot about water flow and how that changes over the seasons. How does that fit in with what you've just told me about making adjustments?
Sure. Because of the topography of where we live, we're right close to the mountains. And the mountains are basically the water towers. In a sense, they're kind of the storage units for the water that we receive. For example, in the Bow, 80% of the flow in the Bow comes from snowpack each year. So what we need to model and what the existing dams are there to do actually is to capture that storage and then allow us to redistribute the water over the remaining parts of the year to supplement natural flows. For example, in the Bow, the city of Calgary, 1.2 million people, there's quite a bit of effluent that comes out of that, and so it needs a certain amount of flow in the Bow River consistently over time in order to be able to ensure that we protect the ecosystem downstream of the city of Calgary. So that's one of the things the dams currently do, and what we were looking at was, okay, how would they manage that under a really significant drought? And are there ways we can mitigate the effects of that drought by managing the dams differently?
What about in the irrigation area? My understanding is that whole area is oversubscribed as it is, and there's always seems to be this demand. We need more water, more water. What did you see in that particular area that could be done without perhaps making a huge number of changes?
Well, you know, one thing we learned is, contrary to popular belief, the irrigation districts really aren't using more water. What they're doing is any expansion that they do, they're doing under their current water licenses and their current allocations. And what they're doing is their expansion is based on improving the efficiency with which they use the water. So taking water from a canal and putting it into a pipeline, as a major example, saves a tremendous amount of water from seepage and evaporation. And also the way that they've gone from various kinds of technologies in terms of distributing the water onto the land, they're now going increasingly to what are called drop pivots. So they're those large pivots that you see that used to spray water up in the air to cover the crops, and now they're dropped down and they use far less water to get the same amount of moisture to the plants. So all those efficiencies are enabling them to use the same amount of water but get a lot more cropping off that same amount of water.
So you get efficiency and conservation working together.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what do you see as being the outcomes of this project that you've done now?
Well, we have a number of recommendations in the final report. One of them is that probably the most simple and almost elementary thing to do on the Bow system to protect both flood and drought and improve environmental conditions during the, you know, the 95% and when things are normal, roughly normal, because you can almost say there's no normal on the river because it varies so very much, but there's an awful lot of period when there's no extremes of drought or flood, and remanaging to some extent the TransAlta reservoirs upstream of Calgary appears to provide some serious significant benefits to the environment during those normal periods, and also can provide a bit of mitigation on a drought system and can also do a significant amount of mitigation during a flood period.
Well, you mentioned flood. You put up a really interesting slide about how things could have come out differently during that flood in 2013 in Calgary and High River. Could you explain that a bit for me?
Sure. The one I think we showed was probably Calgary in the Bow. What happened in 2013 is there was great uncertainty around the forecasting of the storm, and so TransAlta did everything they could under the circumstances in a very short period of time to drain their reservoirs ahead of the big hit of the big flood so that they could store more and thus prevent it going downstream all at once. So basically it shaved the peak. It reduced the peak of the flow through the city of Calgary by about 300 cubic meters per second, which is a lot of water. What we found in the modeling was, had there been better forecasting and we really believed that this flood was going to come and it was going to be very serious, that reservoirs could have been drained further and considerable additional mitigation of that flood through Calgary could have happened.
So the question there is around forecasting, having better forecasting.
It's critical. It's really critical for the entire system, for the Old Man, for the Bow, and for the Red Deer. Improved forecasting, and this is nothing against the current forecaster. They're doing a fabulous job, tremendously overworked bunch of people. They need more resources, and I think what they need is resources to integrate a lot more of the data that are actually out there but are not being used and incorporated into the forecasting system now. And I think they've been thinking real hard about this, and I think we'll probably see improvements. But those improvements then in the forecasting really can then lead to managing the reservoirs and the river systems somewhat differently when extreme conditions seem to be looming on the horizon.
And extreme conditions is really one of the really critical issues as well, isn't it?
It is. It is. Most climate scientists, again, will say, yes, it's probably getting warmer. It'll probably get drier. But beware, because the nature of the system is that it may be upset to the point where you will see both more droughts and more floods.
Now that you've finished this project and it was funded by the CCEMC, what happens to it? Does this material go to the Climate Change and Emissions Management Corporation? Are they going to do something with it, or is WaterSmart going to do something with it?
Well, it goes to the CCEMC, and it's up on their website now, so it's available. There are a number of other projects that we talked about at that conference. You can find them all on the Alberta Water Portal that I mentioned earlier. We did a number of other studies on each of the basins individually, and we did a simulation of how we might be able to manage a terrific drought that we had in 1941 differently. And there must be six other projects that are very much related to this. And we think one of the reasons why it was a good investment for CCEMC is we had a lot of data. The model was already loaded, so we were able to do a lot more analysis instead of some of the methodological and statistical work that can cost a lot of money. We already had a lot of that done.
Just to get back to the title of your project and this underlying factor of adaptation, adapting to climate change, what are your final thoughts on adaptation?
Well, I'm biased, but it is my belief that adaptation, particularly in the area of water, is the most important thing we can do to mitigate and adapt to the type of climate change that I think we're going to see. And you don't have to get all excited about whether climate change is human-caused or not human-caused. When we look at the historical record and we look at the prehistory record, there will be climate change, there is climate change, and it can present some real threats to the existing demand system that we have, because in the past we didn't have 1.2 million people living here in the irrigation systems that we have in place now that are reliant on that water.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Well, you're very welcome.